Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy midweek football week.
This is what happens when you're good. You get to play games not on Saturday and not like randomly on a Friday. You get a Thursday night game. So we get one of those this year. We're going to be down at NC State. Facing the Wolfpack. The Wolfpack are also 3-2. They are also 0-1 in conference play. I'm excited for this one, not just because I'm going to the game, but just because I can't recall the last time that like SU had this sort of spotlight on it in the middle of the week. And that's just a lot of fun to me. Not necessarily the best venue to try out the theory of whether we can win a game like this. If only because NC State has become a little bit of a house of horrors. I think it might be a blessing in disguise, though, that we are not ranked going into this one.
Yeah, do we know what the last Thursday night game was? Obviously, we've had a number of notable Fridays, but Thursday, I can't remember the last time, or if we've played there, because I don't think that was a Big East day at all.
I feel like the Big East got those sometimes. I feel like the 2006 season in particular, I feel like I remember a couple, but why don't you talk a little bit about NC State while I look up some information about the last time we played on a Thursday.
I was going to try to do the same, but we'll talk through it. I'm sure one of us will find the answer here.
Yeah, we'll get it. But yeah, Syracuse faces NC State. It looks like Tommy DeVito is healthy, at least based on Tommy DeVito's account of Tommy DeVito's health. I feel like I trust Tommy DeVito's assessment of his health far more than I trusted Eric Dungy's assessment of his own health, which I guess is a good thing to start.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. We haven't really been down this road with DeVito, but it's also, you know, it's been 10 days. There haven't really been any murmurs that this was like a really serious issue. Hopefully, you know, it just was what it was, and it was a weird, like, game moment. It's weird, just like, there's been so little made of it, like, from within the program that I almost, like, you almost forget going into this game, since it's been a while since we played, that there was like, oh yeah, our starting quarterback had a weird phantom injury at the end of a meaningless game, which generally not the best spot to be in, but usually there are more like whisperings if there was something serious, and there really hasn't been. So I'd be very surprised if Thursday rolls around, it's like, oh yeah, Clayton Walsh is starting, by the way.
Yeah, that would, that would terrify me. B, that would greatly disappoint the fans. I feel, no offense to Clayton, of course. But yeah, I feel like Tommy's good. We'll see if he's like 100% good, or if we quickly find out that he's like 75 to 80% good, and Babers and Tommy feel like that's just kind of best to roll with that. But realistically, like, we're probably going to need the firepower. I think both of these defenses are actually pretty good for Thursday. At the same time, though, I feel like both can display a tendency to do like nonsensical things at times, and that might actually end up driving up the score. I know the over-under is around 58 right now, which seems about right. I'd maybe pick, actually my game pick was probably going to be right in that general wheelhouse, so yeah, I think that's a fair line to start. But yeah, I don't think SU survives this game though without DeVito displaying at least something resembling the confidence and capabilities that he had in like the first half against Holy Cross, or like much of the Western Michigan game.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if he's like kind of shaking off those road woes he's had. He really hasn't had a good road performance yet, between the Notre Dame game last year and then, you know, obviously Liberty, we won the game handily, but he wasn't great, and the Maryland game was a nightmare. Although he was okay against Maryland, like relative to the rest of the team.
After the first like two or three drives, like he was actually much better. It's just that point, like Dino is very, it's frustrating, but I also get it. Like Dino's quick to like he knows the capabilities of this team. And like once they're down 28, 21, I feel like he's one to just like kind of call off the dogs and like start working on things and like use it as a like working like a, you know, real time scrimmage.
Yeah. I think Dino's more pragmatic than your typical college football coach.
Unlike, you know, a Scott Schaefer potentially, who has Eric Dungy running up the middle in a game when they're down by like 28.
Yeah, which I, you know, I appreciate trying to win the game, but you know, I
mean, but you weren't going to win the game.
You can still take shots and like try to, you know, see if a big play breaks out while also like not putting yourself in a position to fail more long term. But yeah, so like you said, I think both these defenses grayed out pretty well. I think they both had some weird spots though. NC State is 3-2. Those two losses are at West Virginia, 44-27. West Virginia was expected to be a pretty deep rebuild this year, and obviously I think we're both big fans of Neil Brown, but most people picked them to finish like ninth in the Big 12, just ahead of Kansas, and they played Texas pretty tough this week, so maybe the West Virginia is not bad, but NC State was like pretty widely expected to win that game and you know, lost handily. And then they lost to Florida State 31-13. Florida State, more talented. They might be figuring some stuff out here in a about as like, you know, necessary a time as possible for Willie Taggart, but still not a you know, inspiring performance by NC State on the road there. So they'll probably enjoy being back home. But even in between those, they had a Ball State game where they only won by 11. So
and that was like a late like push to get them there.
Yeah. First two games, they beat a complete rebuild ECU team by a decent amount, and then Western Carolina 41-0. So actually kind of similar to Syracuse. The two like biggest tests of the year have not gone well. Otherwise, you know, Syracuse, I think, was more impressive than Western Michigan, which is a better team than Ball State. So, yeah, I think we're both teams are really learning what they have. Both teams, I mean, assuming DeVito's okay, NC State has an interesting quarterback situation with Bailey Hockman, a former Florida State quarterback transfer, taking over this week. They really haven't been super effective in that position in those losses. So we will be seeing a team that is shaking things up a bit, which, you know, you have to know either way.
Yeah, I mean, Hockman comes in here. He was at Florida State in 2017. He was also there in 2018.
Never played.
Never played. He was there for the spring game in 2018. Then headed to Hutchinson Community College, sat out a season there, and then managed to get himself to NC State. Now he's the starter. No offense to Bailey Hockman, but he definitely looks like a bro.
Like, he looks like he's getting ready for his Wall Street career.
He looks like his real name is Hockman Bailey, and he just changed it around. Like, because NC State like wouldn't let him in. Like UNC was like, oh yeah, we'll take Hockman Bailey, and then he's like, no, wait, I want to go to NC State.
Hockman Bailey is the name of every person in the SMU student section.
Oh, 100%. And like the future children of the entire Syracuse lacrosse team.
Yes. It's not as good a I forget what they call like the flipped last name first name that you do for the quarterbacks, yeah. But it's not as good as White Mike, but Hockman Bailey is pretty good.
Definitely calling him Hockman Bailey for the entire game. Now I wish I was going to be on Twitter during the game. Somebody has to pick that up in my stead.
We need I think the recap should only call him Hockman Bailey. I know it's bad for SEO and whatever and like accuracy and professionalism, but it's funny.
Yeah, it is. I'm now very much looking forward to this, and I hope like somebody announces it wrong during the game, and then it just becomes a thing.
Also, if I was running the site, I'd probably have said that we should just start calling every opposing quarterback Buckshot for the rest of the year. So I might not be the best person to make these editorial decisions midweek from my podcast.
I mean, I'll support it.
Trevor Buckshot Lawrence had an up and down performance.
I think it's better if they are very like anti Buckshot. Like, I want to see like Jamie Buckshot Newman.
Well, I used to get a Birdshot too. Depending on their like arm power, or their like
or whoever the walk on that's replacing AJ Brown from this year's devastating injury.
Do we think is that either gonna like be the coach by the time we play them? I guess we have them earlier this year, but like
BC is cheap; they're not gonna fire him mid-year.
That's true. Tangent one of the episode. BC, what are you doing?
BC, mildly good or mildly bad.
I think my indications are bad. I mean, they lost to Kansas by a lot, and then they got beat by, and I think Louisville's better than we thought. Louisville probably shouldn't be beating you when you're in like year a million of your program, and they are rebuilding.
They're going like super 7-6 this year, or they're going to go like 4-8.
This might, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Obviously, like BC, you can't just like assume they'll just be bad, but I wouldn't feel great if I was them.
No, I think that whole program's kind of, it's not like they're even bad because they've obviously been able to attract a ton of talent, arguably more than Syracuse has in recent years. It's just they can't translate those to wins because, like, Adazio can't get out of his own way.
To make a bowl.
Yeah, I mean, but, what's the rest of their schedule look like?
They have State after a bye, which they could win, obviously. Because
that's right, we talked about this, but they could start like 6-0 and end 0-6.
Oh yeah, we run in. I mean, that should really happen. Except they didn't start 6-0; they started 3-3, which was not great. Then they're at Clemson, at Cuse, versus Florida State, at Notre Dame, at Pitt. So, like, to make a bowl, they need to beat us, State, and Pitt. Like, pretty definitively, maybe Florida State.
Ooh, boy.
Not great.
No. Well, that 7-6 streak was fun while it lasted.
all good things must end at some point.
But we'll,
I don't really fire Adazio after 1-5-7 season, though. I just think, like, that program.
We just extended him for 2 more years.
Yeah. And also, it's like. They just feel like the program that's going to like really want to like know that they need to move on.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because like realistically, like they did hang with Wake. Like Pitt is pretty much like, you know, pick your poison. Like one day they're like a miserable trash fire and the other, I mean, one half really, they're a miserable trash fire. The other half, they're not. So it just depends on like how good you want to be in the quarter that they're in, the half that they're bad. Us TBD, State mostly TBD.
Yeah, and even like though, like I guess Virginia Tech looks like a good win, but like it's hard to really know because Virginia Tech is a mystery this year. They almost blew a 28-point lead to Miami this weekend. They beat Rutgers by 2 touchdowns. Like that's not, I don't think, impressing anyone. And then Richmond. So yeah, it's I really don't know what to, I mean, it's the ACC, so I don't know what to make of anyone really. But BC, definitely not anything to write home about. I just don't know, like, at what point you decide to move on from Adazio, like 4-8?
I think 4-8 gets him fired. I think 5-7 is a toss up. I mean, the Brown injury, like, complicates matters.
Yeah. Nothing like a quarterback injury to fall back on when you're a embattled coach.
Yeah, this is like, I just don't know what to do with him at this point. And like, I just don't know who BC can get. Not that they can't hire someone. I just don't know like what the, I just don't know what the, like the next step is for them. Like,
yeah, because on paper, like on, if they were to fire him, I think the assumption would be they would try to go spread, which would make sense to a point. But BC, like, I think it almost makes sense to try to do like a little bit of arbitrage and be like the power football program, just as there are so few of them, and they've been good at that. But that's what you have with Adazio, like run, run, run. The problem is like he just does it in a stupid way. Like I almost wonder if BC would be like the triple option team, like Willie, like maybe they go to like Willie Fritz, which I would hate.
Willie Fritz isn't even like option anymore though. I mean, not like to the same extent he used to be.
He might be too high. I mean, he might be shooting too high.
Yeah, Willie Fritz might get the Auburn job.
God, that'd be something. I think Malzahn will be okay this year, unless things really fall apart. I think he's going to be able to hang his hat on Bo Nix being a freshman.
I don't know. I think it depends on what happens in the Bama game. I think if he gets smoked, I think he's gone.
Yeah. The thing is, it's Malzahn, so like you know he will do whatever the exact thing he needs to do to save his job is. Because that's what's been going on for like 4 years running now.
Oh, yeah, which means he's definitely going to upset an 11-0 Bama team.
If Auburn knocked Bama out of the playoff,
and they won't, that's the problem. Like, he'll get the extension, and then they'll announce that they made the field.
Well, it depends on what LSU does, but yes. Yeah, can't wait. The SEC West is going to be a blast this year. I can't wait. Yeah, Willie Fritz, UConn coming off of a impressive win over Army. He's going to do a good job. Hopefully Tulane doesn't turn into, you know, nothing after he leaves. But I think all of our hard work has paid off.
I think it has. I think that we I felt very jilted when I saw the Tulane gear care packages arriving via the Tulane equipment Twitter feed. I felt like we were part of this this magical journey.
I mean, it's been like 5 years, so
yeah,
I think
we're
probably hit as much as a lot of Tulane fans are.
I mean, how many like Tulane fans knew like really knew Wavy the Wave?
We predate Yeoman Stadium. We were going back years.
We liked Tulane before it was cool, and now
definitively.
Now we're the pitchfork of Tulane blogs.
We're at Tulane when whose son was the quarterback who wasn't very good? Was it
Joe Montana?
Yeah, it was Joe Montana. I couldn't remember which former like incredible quarterback whose son had like a like popped on arm. Started against us the one time, and I think he was like a like classic college quarterback who had like a solid 5.2 yards an attempt consistently. Yeah. So Tulane, like, on the verge of being ranked, I hope, somewhere. Like, they, I think they're actually 44th in SP Plus, so that's also appropriate. We are loaning them that magical spot.
Hey, I mean, if we want to have, like, an inter-office exchange program, I don't see this being, like, the worst school to have it with. We get free trips to New Orleans.
We also have, like, history there with, like, supporting Tulane in times of need, and they might do the same for us if this season goes off the rails for us.
Tulane also got us Jim Boeheim as our coach.
That's true. The shared history is really something.
It's very odd. We have like a lot in common with Tulane.
Yeah. Just there's a lot there. You can like the Katrina like student exchange program, which I think Syracuse is like one of the schools that took in the most students from that, you know, really horrible thing. We've played them like occasionally in football. Roy Danforth left Syracuse for Tulane, which was like probably the best thing to ever happen to Syracuse basketball. Yeah, just a strange confluence of things between two private schools in very, very different cities.
Win everyone. I guess using that to loop all the way back to Syracuse. Dan, before we get to halftime, just a little bit more about NC State on offense, at least. We can get into the defense a bit on the second half. So as mentioned, changing quarterbacks, Hakeem Bailey is going to be looking good under center. And, you know, Matthew McKay just didn't really get the job done, kind of diminishing returns per game, which is problematic, especially when like the most diminished return was like the Ball State game, not a team that you should have diminished returns against. The same time, like rushing wise, I felt like their running game was really bad last year, and I feel like it's somehow even worse this year. This is, you know, us kind of looking in the mirror a little bit. The leading rusher for NC State in the games so far, Zonovan Knight had 42 yards in game one, 119 in game two against West Carolina. He had 72 against West Virginia. He had Jordan Houston with 55 as the leading rusher against Ball State, and then Houston again with 61 against Florida State. So not a great start. Also not like the strongest group of opponents. I mean, Florida State is still TBD. I think West Virginia could finish something in like the 5-7, 6-6 range, depending on what the bottom half of the Big 12 looks like. But like that's not a great sign for what they're doing with the run game. And then, yeah, having a passing game that like also has struggled to produce any real like 100-yard receivers. Hasn't looked nearly as explosive as it did with Ryan Finley. Like all Finley, I think we thought he was a good college quarterback, but he was also like well overrated at times just because of accuracy. But at the same time, he was accurate. That really bailed out this team a lot when they had an ineffective run game. And I feel like this year with what's been a pretty inaccurate passing attack so far, like just over 50% completion rate, not having those dynamic receivers with so many guys leaving last year, and then not really having that standout running back to help even like take some of the pressure off the passing game. I feel like this is going to be a long day for most afternoons for them, given the fact that, you know, most offensive lines in the ACC are bad. There's a lot of good pass rushers, but I feel like in particular on Thursday, this is something that Syracuse is going to be able to potentially exploit, though we've done so to like mixed returns in recent weeks against like middling offensive lines.
I'm looking through their like last three bot stores. This is that I think you can throw out like the ECU and I forgot what their FCS game was. Just because those are like overmatched.
WCU.
Ball State should also be overmatched, but they didn't do that. Ball State is 1-3, by the way, and will probably finish in the bottom of the MAC. Against Ball State, they ran for 4.5 yards of carry. They were actually pretty effective on the ground. The other two games, the West Virginia and Florida State losses, they were at, I think, 3.9 and 3.1 yards per carry, respectively. They ran the ball a decent amount, and they actually, like, got a bunch of plays off against West Virginia, so it wouldn't be shocking if this game was played at a pretty decent pace on Thursday. They more abandoned the run in the Florida State game because they fell behind. They were really struggling to get anything going on the ground. Jordan Houston has been probably the most effective, most efficient runner they have. I know Knight has been has the most yardage. I assume he racked most of that up in the early games. But if our run defense looks like it has in the more impressive performances, and we make Hopton Bailey beat us with his arm, I think we might be in decent shape here. I think just NC State, like, for all those years of, like, the 8-4 teams, like, they had some weapons on the outside. They had, you know, solid quarterback play from Finley, even if he was, you know, a little bit – his impressiveness was, like, a little bit overblown at times, as you alluded to. I just don't see this team having the same kind of weapons as they have overall. I just think this offense has taken, like – a pretty large, like, two stride step back here, which is fine because, like, that happens when you're this far into a program. Dorn's been there for a while now. But it just, there just isn't, like, a lot here on paper that stares me offensively. Defensively, I think they're pretty good. And it might, you know, we might kind of struggle to put it away. But I think there's more to like on Syracuse's end of things offensively, even if it's been inconsistent, than here, than for State. Even, like, just looking at these games, like, the rushing attack is very different every game. Like, they're like, they have different guys step up, but it's not like you have like a consistent, lead guy, which can be advantageous at times. But like one game, Jordan Houston will be running for like 9 yards of carry, and the next game he has 3 carries for 2 yards and a touchdown. Like, I don't even know what to make of that. Obviously, you ride the hot hand a bit, but it almost seems like the offense is like confused as to what it wants to be at times.
Yeah, I buy that. I think you and I kind of called this out a little bit, in preseason, where like it was just really confusing as to why people were still like super high on NC State. And it's not that like NC State's going to be like really, really bad. And like, I think we said this going in, but like there wasn't necessarily any clear sign that like this team was going to be, you know, just the same thing on offense without the same quarterback. They lost some offensive line. And I know they've lost another offensive lineman, I believe, for this week. In general, there also wasn't really any sort of inspirational hire, on the offensive side of the football, like when you promote George McDonald to co-OC, which I think is really underrated here as one of the reasons why this offense is absolute garbage.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're just throwing like ridiculous screens. And by ridiculous, I mean bad.
Please
screens all over the place. But George McDonald,
unblocked bubble screens, unblocked bubble screens all day. I'm gonna bring a sign to the stadium.
George.
No, the thing is, like, George knows, like, George very much read those articles because he even like alluded to them on the way out.
Oh, George McDonald. George McDonald, like, can we? I almost have a feeling that like Michigan is getting George McDonald right now with Josh Dattis. Is that like, I don't know if that's too hot to take 5 weeks into the season, but I think that might be happening. I know it's not the same thing. They're just like, they're not running unblocked bubble screens, but like, it's, you know, guy comes in, hasn't called plays before, has this like, you know, promise of like this big production, and then Michigan just looks like they did last year.
same exact thing. I don't know if it's that, but I'll entertain that take.
We'll move forward. That just popped in my head. Obviously, we weren't talking about Michigan at all, but like the George McDonald experience was such a strange era for Syracuse football. And I mean, bought into readily, like at the time, you know, he had been an OC before, but we didn't really know that much about that. We weren't asking a lot of questions. He brought a recruiting acumen that was exciting. And then it just didn't work.
He'd never called plays before, ever. And he hasn't called plays since he left Syracuse. So I believe he's actually not going to be calling. I don't think he's calling plays at NC State.
I mean, they have Roper, right? They have.
Yeah. So, realistically, he's not necessarily, super involved in play calling here. But I can't help but think the co-offensive coordinator has something to do with play calling, or at least design.
Usually if you're a co-OC, that's not a title you get for, a salary bump. Usually that's if they make the assistant head coach thing. It could just be a game planning thing. He's heavily involved in the game planning. But
do we have anyone who looks like Ben Lewis here?
Can we have him run out of the backfield?
Can we have him run out of the backfield, but only with no one blocking for him on the outside?
imagine if McDonald was calling plays for Dungy. Oh my God.
McDonald would have gotten Dungy killed, first of all.
Quarterback draws all day.
Yeah, that would be the only play in the playbook.
Oh God. Those were just such frustrating days.
Watch it would have worked though, because they just would have pulled the defense in, and then he would have had wide open bubble screens.
Unblock the blockers. The blockers are elsewhere.
Jesus. All right, we're going to get more into that. Why don't we take a little break for our sponsor? And we're back. So Dan, let's talk some beer, and then we can talk more about our favorite former assistant coach George McDonald.
Yeah, so I was up in Albany for a day right before we recorded here. Had a nice, not a ton of upstate specific stuff, but just a nice assemblage of things. Had an Edward from Hill Farmstead, which you can find Hill Farmstead down here as well, but very easy to find upstate and always delicious. I stopped at Druthers Brewing in Albany, which is a little nice little brew pub. Had some decent stuff there. Their Dozo was solid, and I actually really liked their pineapple pale ale, which I had a few of, very drinkable. I had a Twisted Thistle IPA from Bellhaven, which is kind of a Scotch IPA, pretty heavy. Really had full bodied. Probably had to drink that faster than I wanted to, because I was we're in a rush, and I probably ordered the wrong beer, but it was good. Had a Sea Quench from Dogfish, which is always delicious. Had a 12th of Never from Lagunitas, which I don't know if I actually had had that before, but it was very good. And then I broke through to the pumpkin beer season, although they've probably been out there for 2 months now, and had a cold pressed coffee pumpkin from Southern Tier. I think I've had this once before. I don't like the coffee one as much as the regular pumpkin, but I wasn't sure if I had tried it before, so I had it. It's still quite good.
Very nice. It actually reminded me that while it's not a North Carolina beer, when I'm down there, I need to acquire some pumpkin, since it does get into the Research Triangle area.
Yeah, I mean, the Eastern Seaboard, you can find it pretty readily every
year.
You
can find it up in Pacific Northwest, too, to be honest. I've had it up in Seattle.
Interesting. Yeah. It's funny because when I was at SU, those first couple of years where it was really blowing up, they couldn't make enough of it.
It goes. It's you grow hype with minimal supply. Then suddenly, Russian River is seeing this now a little bit. I mean, people aren't turning down Pliny, but it's more some of their sours can sit in the fridge for a few days because they recently ramped up production considerably after years and years and years of growing hype with very minimal supply.
Yeah. I mean, that was pumpkin would hit the Lancaster Market would have it randomly, the one little shop that's in the Syracuse student apartment community there, and it would maybe be there for a day, and then you're talking about students buying that, and obviously that's not a craft beer heavy population. You couldn't hold on to it for more than a couple days if once it hit the shelves, it's still very good. So I'd say to actually try to have some of the regular stuff hopefully in the next week or two, because I have seen it a bunch around the city as well.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure we'll both have plenty to share next week. On my end, speaking of Russian River Sours, I had a Sanctification from Russian River. They're actually going to stop bottling that one, which, I mean, it's good. I think what they're replacing it with this beer Intinction, which is, I want to say it was a white wine barrel aged blonde or Pilsner. I forgot what it was, but I actually think that one's a lot better. Also got downtown for a little bit this weekend for the first time in a while. So was over at Modern Times, the Dankness Dojo downtown, had their Stormbringer. It was a double IPA from them. And then their Polyrhythmo, which is a Pilsner from them. Also got over to Highland Park Brewery's Chinatown Tasting Room. Got a really great t-shirt that, I know, describing t-shirts on radio is awesome. But it's basically the Dodgers logo. It just says beers. And then the baseball is just the brewery's logo. So it was a great purchase, as were some of the beers I had. Had a really good grade, say West Coast IPA from them. Had a Uncle Rad Pale Ale. Had their Wowie, one of their more recent New England Pale Ales, New England IPAs. Then I had Neon, one of their West Coast IPAs that they canned recently. Was very glad I got that one. Super fresh, paired very well with my college football watching for the evening.
Awesome.
Indeed. So, last notes on George McDonald while we're still talking about him. Dan, what do you think those offenses could have done with, like, literally, even like Tim Lester? Because, like, admitting that and I'll never understand how Tim Lester became Syracuse's offensive coordinator, but if somehow Tim Lester started as Syracuse's offensive coordinator, like, what would those offenses have potentially been capable of?
I mean, I won't go as far to say, like, maybe, like, I don't know that we'd still have, like, be in the Shostak Schaefer era, but I think even better, like, Tim Lester showed that he can coach an offense at Western Michigan. And by all accounts, like, he's mostly responsible for the offense over there.
Yeah, John Wassing's, like, fourth in passing yards right now in the country.
Yeah, like, their offense is legit good. And has been good since he took over. And they're, like, obviously there's been a step back from that, I don't know why I struggle with names so much recently. Minnesota coach, PJ Fleck. Yeah. not Jerry Kill.
John Bonamigo. I don't know. I'm running out of names.
PJ Fleck, like, mostly because of recruiting. Like, they're still recruiting well for the MAC, but Fleck was recruiting at, like, a borderline Power 5 level. But no, their offense is still, like, really dynamic, and, like, he obviously figured something out there as head coach, and maybe he felt more empowered to really do what he wanted to do. I don't know, obviously, what, like, the discussions between him and Schaefer were, because when he took over from McDonald mid-year, you kind of understood that there was only so much that could be done, and things, I think, did improve a little bit. It was the following year that was so strange that rather than, like, really revamp things, you saw, like, it was different than the year before, but it wasn't, like, we really spread things out. It looked really nothing like what this Western Michigan offense looks like now. So you do wonder, like, why there wasn't more of a change under Lester, and, like, compared to what he is doing now. But I still struggle to think that it wouldn't have been better if Lester was able to, like, really grasp on to, like, what he wanted to do. And I almost, like, wish, you know, one of us had asked him. Obviously, at this point, it's kind of just, like, you know, a pet like project, but I almost, like, wonder if he was told, like, we need to keep things, like, on this kind of stupid power offense trajectory versus, like, what he's been doing lately, or if it was, like, personnel based or what, because it's so radically different than what we've seen out of him since. And I wonder how much, like, what the impact of having McDonald there before him running this very strange scheme was.
Yeah, it was, like, super weird. I feel like Lester is a coach who, and this is not going to be, like, a Tim Lester deep dive, but I feel like Lester's a coach that, like, just kind of understands to, like, work with your personnel a little bit. Because, like, you've seen, like, this Western Michigan team be pretty run heavy. You've seen them be a little more pass happy. Now they're really, like, kind of spreading the ball out a lot. Also because they have a very good running back, Levante Bellamy. Like, what I've never understood is why Lester, and he said this in interviews, he didn't change anything with the offense when he took over for McDonald. Players kept getting injured. You know, we were the walking wounded by the end of that season. And then the next year, he installed what was basically like an option attack, and then quickly realized that, you know, Eric Dungy was like a, like, you know, Johnny Manziel, like, stand-in. But instead of leaning into his playmaking ability down the field, I feel like he did so much more, like, putting him in harm's way. And I'm not saying that as, like, oh my God, he's a terrible coach, as much as, like, they're just, instead of trying to, like, push the, like, gunslinger out of him, they leaned all the way the hell into it. in that season. And I think that, like, while the offense got better, it didn't really get any more efficient. It still, like, leaned very, very heavily on Eric Dungy's playmaking ability. And, like, maybe this isn't to knock Babers, but maybe this is just something that happens too with a player like Dungy, where you get super comfortable in the fact that they'll be able to make something happen at any point in time, and you don't necessarily push yourself as much. I think maybe Kevin Sumlin fell victim to that a little bit at Texas A&M, and you saw what happened after that. I think maybe he's falling victim to that a little bit at Arizona too, where, you know, you have a guy like Khalil Tate who can make things happen pretty much any time, and, you know, Sumlin doesn't necessarily feel the need to really, you know, test the play calling. So not to knock all these coaches, it's just more to point out that, like, there is a weirdness when you have, is, you know, such a talented quarterback like that. And I think that, you know, maybe having, you know, more traditional passer and more traditional group of players around him, Western Michigan, has allowed him to really kind of spread his wings and be a better play caller. And maybe, you know, maybe George McDonald, you know, with some years behind him now, if he eventually gets back into, like, a real, like, play calling capacity, maybe he finds himself in a better situation because he learned from some, you know, past mistakes.
Yeah, the roster thing is also super interesting because obviously I haven't spent a lot of time going back over the 2014 Syracuse offense, because there are infinite better things I could be doing with my life.
I did it for you.
And also you did it for us, but I'm, like, trying to rack my brain on this. I'm pretty sure we all kind of thought, even if we don't want to totally admit it, that while Dungy was clearly the best quarterback on that team by a large margin, the offense almost looked better with Zach Mahoney, like, when he was forced into play. Yeah, like, so
there was almost, yeah, I don't know why or how, but it did.
Yeah, it wasn't like, yeah. It wasn't, Mahoney was not better than Dungy, which we all know. Very, very.
But he was recruited for that offensive scheme.
Right, and he just, like, seemed to fit what they wanted to do better. And now it's kind of an interesting, you know, forward to now, where we kind of thought that, you know, DeVito on paper should fit better into what Babers wants to do. And so far, obviously, it's a incredible. Oh, just muted myself mid-sentence. So far, like, we haven't really seen things at full capacity. But it's just interesting, like, how having a super specific, like, different talent like Dungy, not that he's more talented than DeVito, he just has this very, like, specific way of playing and going about things, and how that impacts coaches. Like, we saw Babers adjust to it pretty well, but it always seemed like it was, you know, a bit of, like, not a square peg in a round hole, but, like, the shapes weren't quite the same, so you could, like, really jam it in there and get some things done, but it wasn't, like, perfect. But also, like, you know, having your guy isn't always, like, exactly what you want either. You know, you saw after like, you brought up Johnny Manziel at A&M, like, after Manziel was there, A&M recruited however many five-star quarterbacks, Kyler Murray one of them, and they almost all ended up transferring, and those are all someone's guys, quote unquote. So just, like, the quarterback coach match in college football is such a weird thing, and especially with, like, the advent of, like, the transfer portal and everyone, like, trying to find their spot, it's become even more tricky. But there's really no science to it, and it's super interesting, and I love to, like, anytime anyone did, like, a deep dive on how often these things work out and, like, who does well with what, it's always super fascinating, because there really doesn't seem to be, like, a locked in answer.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fascinating, it's weird. I mean, it kind of underlines just how random college football can be sometimes. And I think that's half the fun, because, I mean, you look at how Syracuse ended up with the Eric Dungy era. And in some ways, it was literally just because of an unfortunate injury that happened to Terrell Hunt. And that launched us into the Dungy era, and that launched us into the Babers era by default, because Babers saw what he could have in Dungy. So, you know, everything kind of happens for a reason. Hopefully everybody involved in all these situations turns out as well as they were supposed to. But it's definitely a lot of fun, and I think quarterbacks in particular provide a lot of entertaining what if possibilities.
I was just reacting to an awful interception in Monday Night Football, so I think that probably got caught because I wasn't muted.
It did, but it's fine. Are the Browns, like, fucking this up?
The Browns, someone, I don't know who the receiver was, just bobbled a ball at the goal line directly into a 49ers hands, who then just returned it about 35 yards.
Messing up my Super Bowl bet.
So Baker, from the 10-yard line, threw the ball to Is that Odell? Who's 11 on the Browns? Not Odell.
No.
Oh, it's Callaway, the former Florida receiver. He wide open in the end zone, basically threw the ball to a 49er defender.
Christ. I've watched 0 seconds of the NFL this year, by the way.
Oh, the NFL's actually been fun this year. And how I feel awful saying this. College football hasn't been the best so far this year, and I undoubtedly will turn around, but this is like the most boring like first 6 weeks of a college football season I can remember in a while.
Well, we said this last year too though.
Yeah, so I have faith that it'll turn around, but like we're way overdue for like a chaos week. We really haven't got it. There've been good moments, but I think it's mostly that like the big games haven't really lived up.
And the good teams are just too damn good at this point. Yeah. Like, there's such a gulf between the top probably six teams and everybody else.
Now, I will say this year that group is bigger, but I think the gap is greater too. Like, I think there are more top tier teams this year, but the gap between tier one and tier two is probably bigger, which doesn't help because you only get so many of those tier one games every year. That being said, there are things like SMU, Tulsa, which was like an absolute delight. You just have to find it. There's amazing games every week. They just aren't always like the top 25 games.
Yeah, you have to tune into ESPNU on a lark and tell yourself that you're going to watch this game for most of it and have fun. Or you're gonna check Twitter before you go to bed at 10:30 Pacific time, see that the UCLA game is entirely turned around, and then end up getting yourself back in front of the television after tuning out in the first half and end up seeing one of the better games of the last decade.
This is why you need, like, college football is such an essential multi-stream experience, and it's easy for me to say because I'm in an office every Saturday where I am, you know, mandated to watch multiple games at once. But you can always have, like, your one game, and you're like, okay, Ohio State, Michigan State, I need to have that on, just that's the big game right now, et cetera. And then you have the other game, the other TV, and that's for when SMU Tulsa is like a 30-point comeback, or like Miami Virginia Tech is getting super weird. Like, you just like you have your TV on the game that should be good but may not be, and then you have the other TV for the game that like no one thought about going into the weekend, and it ends up being the craziest thing you've ever seen. And that's where college football has the advantage. But like I do hope some of those like the big high build games come around. Although I do think, like, this weekend's biggest game is probably Auburn, Florida. Auburn, Florida was bad football, but it was fun.
Yeah, no, this will be a good game. I think Texas, Oklahoma will be a good game.
Texas, Oklahoma is always usually at least entertaining.
Yeah, it's pointy at the very least. There's going to be a lot going on.
This week will be good.
Yeah, my college football watching thing, I have one TV, but I always have my back channel set up, like, from the beginning. And then I always have my ESPN scoreboard up. Mm-hmm. So the second I start seeing, like, you know, like, I'll pick a game and I'll watch the first quarter and I really won't, like, divert from it except, like, during commercials. And then I'll start to, like, change up my back channel, like, system as we go. And then I'll also have a game, like, queued up on ESPN Plus so that anytime, like, we reach halftime, I know I can find, like, a random, like, UAB Old Dominion game on there at, like, any time of day or night.
Yeah. ESPN Plus is pretty great just because there's a lot of those. If you care about the group of five, like, it's essential. And then having a good Twitter feed, because Twitter will let you know where the stupid fun is, and they're like, it's going to be very loud about it if you follow the right college football people.
Agreed. Obviously back to Syracuse, not obviously for this program, but back to Syracuse nonetheless. Dan, who do we need to watch out for on this NC State defense? Because obviously we've mentioned them a few times. They're not a difficult group, but I think that they're a group worth caring about. I think the back seven's really the bigger strength here. I mean, we were used to really having like strong defensive lines for several years in a row. I think last year you saw NC State kind of start to move on from that really strong senior group. This year they've got some really strong linebackers and guys like Louis Assias and Peyton Wilson. And then they also have some younger DBs like Tanner Engel and Chris Ingram, who are all quality tacklers. I think that that's really, you know, the strength of this group, and whether or not those linebackers stop the run is probably going to dictate a lot for Syracuse, because if they can stop the run and you have some potential lockdown corners out there, that could make Tommy DeVito's day a lot harder. And the second he starts playing hero ball, and this is something we got into in even the season previews, that's when things can start to kind of fall apart. And that's where things realistically have kind of fallen apart for Syracuse when they've gone poorly.
Yeah, I think they're pretty steady. We outlined like some questionable moments for them earlier in the year, although you could say the same thing about us, and we like a lot of our guys. I think the guy who's jumping off for me right now is Laurel Murchison, the defensive tackle. He's coming off a huge Damon in Florida State. He had 3.5 sacks. He has 4 sacks over the last 2 weeks. The fact that you can get, like, if you watch like any Los Angeles Rams football, you know what, or even Syracuse last year, you know the difference that having a pass rush option up the middle at defensive tackle can be. It really opens things up. And considering our kind of struggles along the offensive line, especially in the middle, if he can blow things up from the defensive tackle spot, that's a huge advantage for NC State. So I think he's definitely going to be one to watch up front.
You bring that up. I think it's kind of an underrated aspect of this season so far. And we've talked about it here and there. Not having McKinley Williams up front is someone who can definitely like run stop, take up some attention from the offensive line. It's not to knock Kenny Ruff and Josh Black. I think both of them have performed pretty capably. They're like, I know for Black, his first real extended starting minutes in a few years. And Ruff, his first extended starting minutes at all at Syracuse. They filled in admirably, but they're not taking up the attention that, you know, Williams and Chris Layton did last year. And I think that really did help the pass rush. It really did help, you know, Coleman. I mean, I think it helped Coleman in particular get through. I know Alton Robinson's really had, while the numbers aren't popping out off the page, I think he still had a stellar season so far. And I think the second that Williams is back, and we'll see if he is back, because based on the depth chart update today, it didn't look like a great sign. But if he can get back, like, you know, Robinson and Coleman could potentially get on a tear. And this is just like kind of what we're seeing. Like this is probably like the most underrated part of all the injuries this year, I think, is McKinley Williams' absence and what it's doing to, like you're seeing when SU's pressure gets to a quarterback, it's taken them a while to get there versus last year, where speed rush could really, you know, attack a quarterback and you know, neutralize him pretty quickly. I think that also helped, you know, the secondary generate turnovers, and the secondary's done a good job anyway this year, but I think that they're getting burned in coverage more because plays have more time to develop, and it's kind of preying on maybe some of their weaknesses this year.
Yeah, I think it's hard to overstate how important Slayton was last year. He obviously was like an NFL talent, and having that kind of guy in the middle just makes the life for the defensive end so much easier. And Robinson's graded out super well. If you look at like Pro Football Focus, I think he's been the highest rated, I forget if it was defensive end or defensive player.
I think ACC as edge rusher, I think?
Yes. Of the year, despite not having like a ton of production, because he's been winning his one-on-one matchups really consistently. But when you can afford to double team him, obviously that gives other people opportunities. But having Slayton and Williams last year made it very hard to double team anyone, because all four of those guys did at home. And I do think Coleman's been the biggest he's taken the biggest hit, because occasionally he'll see the double, but also there's not that much attention needs to be paid up the middle, just because those guys, aside from a couple spots here and there, haven't been the same type of threat to offensive lines. But we'll see like how things progress. Obviously, getting Williams back, I think, would be huge. It has gone, you know, because we haven't had him all year, it's been hard to like focus on that. But like, I do think that'll make a big difference once he does get back, and hopefully it's soon. But also, ACC, like, if anything, offensive line play is probably, like, going to get worse here on out, just because the ACC is so bad at that position. Basically, everyone that we see here on out. And NC State is among those groups that struggled as much, or if not more, than Syracuse. So we could see a lot of production from both sides on the defensive line this on Thursday night.
Yeah, hopefully not too much from the pack. One more question before we kind of get into predictions and all that. Assuming we don't see Williams this week, but we see him eventually in the next couple of weeks, do you think that Williams' return potentially gets Mikal Jones like into the starting lineup when we're in a nickel? Because I feel like he's had a lot of minutes when we're running a 4-3, not so many when we're in the nickel setup, where it's usually just Andrew Armstrong and Lakeem Williams. I feel like Mikal Jones has really kind of shown himself to get better week over week, and seems like you know, a great rising option on the depth chart. So do you think that Williams is really kind of the key to getting Jones on the field more from a run-stopping perspective?
He certainly helps because it just makes the run defense that much better. I do think Jones, you'll see more playing time here, like from here on out. He's definitely had some freshman mistakes that you expect, but he definitely pops on the screen when he's out there. Even when he made those mistakes, he's so athletic. He's such a talent. And we knew that going in, he was one of the two or three top guys coming into the year in that 2019 freshman class. So I definitely like to see more of him because honestly, like the linebacker group, has had its struggles that, you know, were expected coming in just because of the inexperience. And if everyone's inexperienced, I'd kind of just lean with the most talented guys and get them built up.
Agreed. Before we get into predictions, I got yelled at by a couple people about the boomers comment from earlier.
That took long.
You'll never guess what generation these people are part of. Could it be?
I mean, they could be just very deferential Gen Xers.
They're definitely boomers.
Boomers don't know how podcasts work, so we're all good.
Yeah, it's fine. There's like a couple of them. And if you're listening and you're a boomer, hi. But yeah, so we won't get into the full details, but basically one entrepreneurial Penn State fan decided that that he had to send a letter. It was definitely racially biased. And just kind of talk about the fact that, you know, act like you've been there before and all these like really stupid, like selfish, nonsensical terms, you know, about dress codes and tattoos and all this crap that like, you know, really only like, just like, really only boomers have time to put in a letter.
But he sent it to a Penn State player and then Penn State CJ Holmes, posted it on Twitter. It's rough. It's like just so clearly like racially tinted. Like it's just that whole thing of like, oh, look, like, you know, you're cleaned up and like this stupid like version of like the Yankees can't have facial hair thing, but then like complaining about Penn State players having dreadlocks and tattoos. Like, man, like look at any team. Like, guys are gonna have dreadlocks and tattoos, and that is totally fine. Let them live their lives. They don't owe you anything because they play for Penn State football. It's just, it's gross. It's really gross. And obviously, I don't think that's like a thing that will only happen in Happy Valley. Like, we could certainly see some Syracuse commenter, Syracuse.com folk in from the comments popping up and saying similar things. It's just like a really unfortunate part of this whole thing. But another reminder that just because they play for the college that you either went to or support in some way, does that give you the right to like, comment on their appearance or, you know, how they live their lives off the field, as long as they're like doing the right things and, you know, are playing well and representing themselves fine for the university? Like, who cares?
Agreed. Yeah, it's the usual trash where there's this ownership complex of players that play for your team, whether it's college or professional. They don't owe you anything, and like, you know what, you don't owe them anything either. If you don't want to watch, don't watch. If you don't want to donate to the athletic fund, don't do it. Yeah, like the fact that you took the time like to put the letter together shows that you actually like think that you have some sort of ownership stake here.
And then, like, just like, it almost bothered me more when they were like trying to like show off their Penn State fan bona fide. It's like, man, no one cares. It was like, it was absolutely gross thing for you to go out of your time to handwrite and then find the address for the athletic department, probably in a phone book somewhere, and then drive over to the post office, buy a stamp and send it. Like, you have to have better things to do than worried about how someone wears their hair. Like, that's just so absurd.
Zero chance they have better things to do.
Fair. Get a hobby. Learn to knit. Like, come on.
And any hobby.
Anything.
All right. So prediction time, Dan. Do you think Syracuse wins this one? Am I going to be annoyed at a Syracuse game for the, I don't know, I think it's like fourth straight time now?
Yes. I mean, obviously. We're obviously going to be annoyed. I do think Syracuse wins it. I'm going to go Syracuse 27-24. I think it'll just be back and forth the whole time. But I think we'll pull it out. I think we'll just make a couple more big plays.
All right. I'm going to go Syracuse 31, NC State 27. I think we get the push here. I feel like there's just too many absences and there's too many things like getting changed up on the NC State side. Really, if even like one of Cisco, Melifonwu, McKinley Williams, or Sam Heckles back this week, I'm feeling a hell of a lot better about that prediction.
If all four of those are out, which was like, I don't know if Babers is just being coy or trying to be like, trying to obfuscate, which is very possible.
There's nothing stopping him from doing so anymore. So.
No, and also like, oh my God, what is happening in this football game? the Browns are so stupid. For Babers, I think, is really good at like managing the media more than he's good with the media. But a lot of that's like his handling of injuries. He's not like rude about things generally, but he will have no problem obfuscating as much as he needs to. So it wouldn't surprise me if all four of those guys played on Thursday, and it wouldn't be surprised me if none of them played. But the fact that he said that there are no status updates, I think it doesn't tell us a lot.
Yeah. I've learned that the depth chart doesn't mean anything, and that, Babers injury updates since the ACC no longer mandated them also don't mean anything. And it makes it very frustrating as a fan and as a media member. But at the same time, like, I guess, whatever, fingers crossed. Hopefully we see at least a couple of these guys. I do think that, you know, Williams is a really a key piece that his absence has really hurt us. I think Heckle, while he isn't a cure-all for the offensive line struggles, I think he would have at least made things a little bit easier given the amount of youth that we have out there. I'm hopeful that we see some of these guys, though, because even selfishly, just because I want to see, Cisco in particular, I'd love to just see live and see him.
Especially against a quarterback who doesn't have a lot of experience.
And is going to get blitzed the hell of a lot.
Yeah. We're going to bring a lot of pressure, and Andre Sisto is one of the best ball hawks in the country, and when you have a Hockman Bailey out there for, like, what will end up being his second, like, serious playing time, because he really, like, the Florida State game is, like, the only time he's really thrown more than, I think, a couple passes, you want your ball hawk out there.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and, like, what would you miss on the broadcast with Sisto is what he does before the ball arrives. And just how he plays out in open field coverage. And that's something that, like, I wanted to see out in full display live.
Yeah, it's he's impressive. He's so rangy and reacts so quickly and breaks on balls well. I assume, like, veteran quarterbacks will be able to catch him more. But, like, I think his biggest issues have just been, like, open field tackling and stuff. He really hasn't gotten caught, like, on fakes or whatever, or, like, maybe we just haven't played savvy enough quarterbacks in general yet, but you haven't seen him get tricked for his aggressiveness in overplaying passes and whatnot, really, which is impressive.
Agreed. Dan, anything else before we head out today?
No, looking forward to the game. It'll be nice. Obviously, we love to have Syracuse on the TV on Saturdays, but it was kind of nice having the bye week to be able to enjoy other stuff. And it'll be nice to have Saturday to enjoy other stuff after a Thursday game. So I'm looking forward to it. I will hopefully get out to like a bar or something to watch. And hopefully we're looking at 4-2. It'd be for all of like the concerns and the kind of kvetching about how the team has looked. If we're 4-2, then, you know, we're in pretty good shape.
That's almost where we thought we'd be.
Yeah, I mean, it's like ultimately it's you know, roughly where we thought we'd be. And like, you could have subbed and said NC State ended up being better than we thought, and Maryland ended up being worse. And like, you could have gotten to the same place without like too much dramatics in terms of predictions.
Agreed. Everyone, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Megaphone, on Spotify, on Stitcher, TuneIn, several other places, I'm sure, Overcast, which I use. And be sure to tune in on Thursday, and go Orange.
Go Orange, and Tulane's going to beat UConn by a million.